In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, one God, Amen. Tonight, we will study chapter 23 from the book of Acts. This chapter speaks about the trial of St. Paul before the Sanhedrin Council. As you know, from the previous chapter, St. Paul was arrested and was accused with some accusations against the temple and against the Jewish nation and also against the law of Moses. And when St. Paul wanted to speak to all the people, actually they did not listen to him, and they start to shout and scream that this person should not live about St. Paul. So the commander took St. Paul from the people, lest they kill him, and there was a meeting between St. Paul and the Sanhedrin Council in order for St. Paul to explain or to defend himself, in the same way the commander wanted to understand what is the accusation against St. Paul. So in this chapter we will see how St. Paul defended himself before the Sanhedrin Council. Then the second part of the chapter is about a plot that the Jews made against St. Paul to kill him. And the last part of the chapter, how the commander rescued St. Paul from this plot and sent him to the governor, Felix, in order to be tried before him. This is the summary of the chapter. And now let's start reading it verse by verse. Verse 1. Then Paul, looking earnestly at the council here, the Sanhedrin Council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day." St. Paul started his defense by affirming that he always maintained good conscience in the sight of God. As we read also in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 verse 4 and 2 Timothy chapter 1 verse 3. And here there is a lesson for all of us, that we should keep our conscience clear before God, which means by obeying the commandments of God, by following His way. And if we disobey God, if we break one of His commandments, then through repentance we will keep good conscience before God. But of course, the high priest, the Jewish high priest, he didn't like this because he perceived St. Paul as blasphemer against the law, against the temple, and against Israel. So when he heard St. Paul saying, "I have lived in all conscience before God until this day," verse 2, and the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth, because he said, according to Ananias, he said something wrong. That's why Ananias commanded that St. Paul be struck on the mouth. If we analyze this behavior, it was arrogant behavior from Ananias. And also, it is illegal, according to the law of Moses, it is illegal to hit St. Paul. But it is displaying of hypocrisy and prejudice and hatred towards St. Paul. Ananias did this because he did not love St. Paul, he hated him, and also he was very prejudiced against Christians, and also the arrogance and hypocrisy made him command that St. Paul be struck on his path. But actually, if we study the life of St. Paul, we know that he maintained good conscience before God. His reputation actually preceded him, and he converted a lot of Jews to Christianity, and also he converted a lot of Gentiles to Christianity. So the reputation of St. Paul preceded him. So in response to this, in verse 3, St. Paul said to the high priest, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you said to judge me according to the law, and do you command me to be struck contrary to the law? So St. Paul here reacted, and maybe, as I will explain, what he told him, that God will strike you, it was a prophecy. Because I will explain how Ananias died right now. So actually, he prophesied about how Ananias will die, and how God actually struck him. But it's interesting to call him whitewashed wall. Whitewashed wall. Wall, because Ananias, with his hypocrisy, with his arrogance, with his prejudice, is like a wall preventing people from approaching to God. You know, on the cross, when the Lord Jesus Christ died on the cross, the middle wall, the veil, was torn down. So, St. Paul is telling him, you are like a wall between people and God, preventing people from approaching God. But this wall, he describes white wall. White wall, you remember when the Lord said to the scribes and Pharisees, you are like whitewashed the tombs from outside, but inside full of corruption. So he's saying to Ananias, you look like whitewashed wall. From outside you are a high priest, you know the law, you obey the law. So from outside you look like whitewashed. Hypocrisy. But in reality, you are presenting and hindering people from getting close to God. And he confronted him. He told him, now actually, you are judging me according to the law. But while you are judging me according to the law, you yourself breaking the law. Because according to the law, I should not be actually stricken. As we read in Exodus chapter 22, verse 28, Exodus 22, 28, that he should not be struck. Let me give you a little bit explanation of how Ananias died. Ananias was appointed by Herod in 47 AD. He was appointed by Herod as high priest in 47 AD. He proved himself to be one of the most corrupt and manipulative schemes to serve in the temple. Ananias stole tithes from the other priests, because he was a lover of money. Also, he cared more about the Roman Empire more than it. That's why when the Jews revolted against Rome, actually the Jews rebelled, burned down Ananias' home. because they knew that Ananias was loyal to the Roman Empire more to Israel. And later on, he was assassinated by his own people. So when St. Paul told him, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, he was prophesying about how Ananias will die. Then actually those who stood by said to St. Paul, do you revile God's high priest? And St. Paul replied and said, I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest. So St. Paul here is saying, I didn't know that he is the high priest. Maybe St. Paul indeed didn't know that he is the high priest. Or maybe he knew that he is the high priest, but he is saying, if he is the high priest, he should act like a high priest to follow the law. But if he is commanded me to be struck contrary to the law, then he is not acting like a high priest. But St. Paul actually said, I shouldn't do this, because there is a commandment. It is written, you shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people. And I'm sorry, the reference that I mentioned in Exodus 22:28 is about this verse. You should not speak an evil about the ruler of your people. So here, St. Paul was willing to apologize. He said it was wrong for me to revile the high priest, but also it was wrong for the high priest to strike me. But St. Paul focused on his error here by saying, it is written that you shall not speak evil about the ruler of your people. Here St. Paul demonstrating a very good example. When we do something wrong, or when we say something wrong, we should take responsibility of it and focusing on our error without trying to find excuses. St. Paul didn't try to justify what he did, but he said, yes, I shouldn't do this, because it is written, you shall not speak evil of the ruler of your people. So he was focused, he focused on his error. What was speaking against God? His error was speaking against God's appointed leader, no matter how bad that leader is. No matter how bad the leader is, God instructed us not to speak evil about our leader. St. Paul apologized for his error, expecting nothing in return. He did not expect apologies from Ananias or anybody else. But St. Paul realizes that this trial will not be fair anymore. And any hope for a fair trial before the Sanhedrin is hopeless. There is no hope to have a fair trial. So St. Paul actually did something very, very wise. As we read in verse 6, but when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged. St. Paul said, when he knew they are Sadducees and Pharisees, so he said, let me turn them against each other. How? Number one, he is a Pharisee. So when he says, I am a Pharisee, son of a Pharisee, he will get all the Pharisees into his power. Number two, the Pharisees do not believe in the resurrection of the dead. But the Pharisees believe in the resurrection of the dead. So by saying, on the hope and the resurrection of the dead, I am being judged, actually, He will make them divide against each other. Because the Pharisees believe in the resurrection, and the Sadducees do not believe in resurrection. So, St. Paul recognized that there were Sadducees and Pharisees present in the Sanhedrin. He also knew the schismatic condition of the Sanhedrin, and very wisely took advantage of it in order to save his own life. St. Paul himself, a Pharisee, and now preaching a gospel, the gospel of resurrection, actually took this opportunity to get all the Pharisees on his side, and thus he divided his enemies. This caused actually dissension and conflict among the Sanhedrin, because as I told you, the Sadducees do not believe in the resurrection, but the Pharisees believe in the resurrection. So, in verse 7, we see how this division happened. And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, and no angel or spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. In chapter 22, St. Paul spoke to them about trance happened to him, vision he saw in the temple. And we see how the Pharisees supported St. Paul here. In verse 9, then there arose a loud outcry, and the scribes of the Pharisees' party arose and protested, saying, we find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. So actually, the wise plan of St. Paul worked very well here. And now actually, the Pharisees saying, if we are attacking St. Paul, we are fighting with God. And I want you to note here they use the word, if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him. Why spirit or an angel? Because in verse 8, the Sadducees do not believe in a spirit or angel. So here actually the scribe of the Pharisees spoke out that they find nothing evil in St. Paul. There is nothing evil in him. And if they are fighting him, actually they are fighting God. And maybe the Pharisees also reminded that St. Paul was with them, and he was contending with them against the Sadducees. A spirit or an angel, this referring to the vision that St. Paul saw and was mentioned in Acts 22, verse 17. Acts 22, verse 17. And they mentioned spirit or an angel as a defense to the Sadducees who denied both angels and spirits. Verse 10. Now when there arose a great dissension, the commander, fearing lest Paul might be put to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force from among them and bring him into the barrack. So actually the commander here became afraid of any harm would happen to St. Paul. That's why he ordered the soldiers to take St. Paul back to the barrack. I'm sure St. Paul was very disappointed. As I told you, any hope for fair judgment or trial was gone. So I can imagine when St. Paul went to the barrack, he was very down. He was very sad. He needs to be comforted. So who will comfort him? Verse 11, But the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, here the Lord actually himself appeared to St. Paul to comfort him. Believe me, when we go through difficult times and we need comfort in our life and there is no people around us to comfort us like the situation of St. Paul, the Lord himself will comfort us. He appeared to St. Paul and told him, be of good cheer. Rejoice, Paul. So, St. Paul is in prison or in jail or under arrest, but the Lord is telling him, be of good cheer. Be of good cheer, Paul. For as you have to fight for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome. And these are comforting words from St. Paul. God encouraged him and told him, what you did in Jerusalem is testimony for me. You testified for me in Jerusalem. That's Acts 23, verse 11. And also, you will go to Rome and you will bear witness to me or for me at Rome. So that actually made him look forward. They will not kill you. You will go to Rome, and when you go to Rome, you will actually testify of me and bear witness of me. One of the things said, when the human consolation go down, the divine consolation increases. As much as human consolation decreases, the divine consolation increases. St. Paul didn't have anybody with him, but God was with him. And he appeared by himself to St. Paul to comfort him and to give him hope. Verse 12. And when it was day, some of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under an oath. They made a vow, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. So they made vow, a group of them actually, they were more than 40, as we read in verse 13. Now there were more than 40 who had formed this conspiracy. So more than 40 persons actually decided or made a vow or an oath before God that they will not eat or drink until they kill St. Paul. And actually, how to kill him? They made a plot. This plot is that chief priest asked St. Paul to go to them to be tried. And on the way, they will appear to him and kill him. This fourth verse. As we read in verse 14. He came to the chief priests and elders and said, we have bound ourselves under a great oath that we will eat nothing until we have killed the poor. Now you therefore, together with the council, suggest to the commander that he, St. Paul, be brought down to you tomorrow, as though you were going to make further inquiries concerning him. But we are ready to kill him before he comes near. So actually, the conspiracy is St. Paul would appear before the Sanhedrin the next day. And they will actually lie in wait for him on the road and kill him before he arrives to the Sanhedrin. And this plotting was told to the chief priests and the elders and were accepted by them. Who are these Jews? Maybe they were from Jerusalem, or maybe they are Jews from Asia, who were actually the enemies of St. Paul, because he thought that St. Paul defiled the temple and allowed Gentiles to enter into the temple when they saw Trophimus the Ephesian with him. Or maybe these Jews belonged to a wild fanatical association of Jewish assassins who few years later played a prominent part called Sicari. So these actually some Jews, more than 40, who made a plan to kill St. Paul. But God actually, who protected him, needed St. Paul's nephew to hear about this conspiracy, as we read in verse 16. So when Paul's sister Susanna heard of their ambush, he went and entered the barrack and told Paul. So actually, St. Paul nephew heard of the ambush plot, and actually, from this verse, we know that St. Paul had a sister, and this sister was married, and she had a son. But nothing more actually we know about the family of St. Paul. So his nephew went to St. Paul in the barrack and told him what he had heard. And this actually gives us an idea how St. Paul was treated while he was in the barrack. There was more difficulty of access for St. Paul, because St. Paul was a Roman and would be treated with courtesy. That's why his nephew was able to go to him and tell him about this ambush. St. Paul asked his nephew to go and tell about the conspiracy to the commander, as we read in verse 17. Then Paul called one of the centurions to him and said, "Take this young man to the commander, for he has something to tell him." And here we note that St. Paul did not trust the centurion. He didn't say to the centurion what his nephew heard, but he asked the centurion to take his nephew into the captain or the commander in order for the nephew of St. Paul to say to the commander about the plot. Verse 18. So he, the centurion, took him and brought him to the commander and said, "Paul, the prisoner, called me to him and asked me to bring this young man to you. He has something to say to you." Then the commander took him by the hand, went aside and asked privately, "What is it that you have to tell me?" And here actually we see how the commander treated St. Paul with courtesy. Thus, he didn't see him as a prisoner, but he knew that St. Paul was falsely accused. That's why when his nephew came to him, he took him privately and actually paid attention, asked him, "What do you want me to tell me?" Verse 20, and he said, "The Jews have agreed to ask that you bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire more fully about him. But do not yield to them, for more than 40 of them lie in wait for him, men who have bound themselves by an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now they are ready, waiting for the promise from you." So he told him all the plan, and actually the commander believed St. Paul's nephew. He didn't tell him, "I like to investigate this." He trusted him, so he believed him. So he reacted immediately. How did he react? Number one, as we read in verse 22, "So the commander let the young man depart and commanded him, 'Tell no one that you have revealed these things to me. He asked him to send the one that he had spoken to the commander about the plot. And this action was a right and wise decision from the commander to conceal this matter. Because if these 40 persons knew that their plot was discovered, they would actually plan another plot. That's why he told him, tell no one that you talk to me. And St. Paul actually, St. Paul's nephew departed from the commander, and the commander started to plan how to rescue St. Paul from the hand. And here I want you to notice, God respected the free will of these wicked people who planned to kill St. Paul. So God did not prevent the conspiracy, but God made a way of escape from St. Paul from their hands. So they went with their plan, but God rescued St. Paul from their hands, as we will see what the commander did. Verse 23, and he called for 2 centurions, saying, prepare 200 soldiers. Centurion, he is a leader of 100. So 2 centurions, then we'll have 200 soldiers. Then 70 horsemen and 200 spearmen. So the total number will be 470. 200 soldiers, 200 spearmen, and 70 horsemen. So 70 soldiers and spearmen and horsemen to go to Caesarea at the 3rd hour of the night. 3rd hour of the night is 9 p.m. 9 p.m. And provide mounts to set Paul on and bring him safely to Felix the governor. So the whole force was 470 men, and the size of the escort was large enough to kill any thought of the 40 Jewish people of following him. So if the 40 Jewish people knew that St. Paul is going to Caesarea and they tried to go and kill him on his way to Caesarea, they will find 470 soldiers, spearmen, and horsemen. So they wouldn't be there to approach this escort. And the escort had to take St. Paul to Caesarea at 9 p.m. Why 9 p.m.? It is long after sunset. So, of course, at the time there is no electricity. So by 9 p.m., actually the streets of Jerusalem would be clear. And St. Paul and his escort would leave the city with as little disturbance as possible, with no disturbance at all. And the commander decided to send St. Paul before Felix the governor. Felix was originally a slave, but actually he took a high position. Why? Because his brother Palas was the emperor's favorite, and he secured this important position of governor for Felix in 52 AD. And the Roman law required that when a prisoner was sent by a lower official to a higher official for trial, a letter should be sent stating the charges. That's why the commander wrote a letter to Felix to accompany St. Paul, to say what are the charges against St. Paul. And the letter actually summarizes the situation with St. Paul, as we read in verse 25. He wrote a letter in the following manner. Claudius Lysias, this is the commander, that's his name, So the most excellent governor Felix, greet me. This man, St. Paul, was seized by the Jews and was about to be killed by them. Coming with the troops, I rescued him, having learned that he was a Roman. This actually what happened in chapter 22. The Jews actually seized St. Paul and were about to kill him. So this commander came with the troops and rescued him, and also he knew that St. Paul was Roman. And when I wanted to know the reason they accused him, I brought him before their council. That's also the last step. And I found out that he was accused concerning questions of their law, the law of Moses, but had nothing charged against him deserving of death or shame. So he knew that he was falsely accused. And when it was told to me that the Jews lie in wait for the man to kill him, that is the conspiracy that the nephew of St. Paul told the commander about, I sent him immediately to you and also commanded his accuser to state before you the charges against him. So he sent to St. Paul's chief, and then he will ask the accuser to go before Felix the governor to state their charges before the governor. Farewell. So, this is a summary of what happened to St. Paul. And St. Paul here, as we see, he is sent to Felix not as a criminal, but as a fellow citizen that the commander rescued from their hand. He told the Jews, seized him and I rescued him. So St. Paul is not sent as a prisoner or as a criminal, but as rescued fellow citizen, Roman. And Lysias in the beginning didn't know that he was a Roman, but after that, actually, he knew that he was Roman. And he was embarrassed that he asked the soldier to beat St. Paul, to beat up St. Paul, because this was against the Roman law. Verse 31, then the soldier, as they were commanded, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. So actually they stopped, they didn't go to Caesarea all the way, because travel by night maybe was not safe. So they just want to take him safely outside Jerusalem and spend the night, and on the following day they continue their journey to Caesarea. So they brought him by night to Antipatris. Antipatris was about 38 miles away from Jerusalem. 38 miles away from Jerusalem. Then on the next day, we see that the horsemen returned back. Again, the whole force was 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen. So as we read in verse 32, the next day they left the horsemen to go on with him and returned to the barrack. So the 70 horsemen continued with St. Paul to Caesarea, but the 200 soldiers and the 200 spearmen returned back to the barrack. The 70 soldiers went with St. Paul, 70 horsemen went with St. Paul to Caesarea, but the 420 soldiers and 20 spearmen went back to the barrack. And Caesarea was 26 mile distant. So the danger was over, because they spent the night in Antipatris, and the next day it was safe to travel these 26 miles with the 70 horsemen to Caesarea. verse 33, when they came to Caesarea and had delivered the letter to the governor, Felix, they also presented Paul to him. So Paul met the governor. And when the governor had read it, he asked what province he was from, because the law that he should be tried before his province, the governor of his province. And when he understood that he was from Cilicia, he said, I will hear you when your accusers also come. Cilicia falls under Felix, the governor. So when he knew that he was from Cilicia, he told him, stay now until your accusers come and I will hear you. And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's praetorium. So he presented Paul and the letter to Felix, and Felix was the governor of Judea under the proconsul of Syria. And because St. Paul came from another province, he wanted to make sure whether he is under his jurisdiction or not. That's why he asked about it. And when he knew that he is from Cilicia, actually he retained him. And he kept him in Herod's praetorium. This praetorium or this palace was built by Herod the Great in Caesarea for his own residence, but now actually is occupied by Felix, the governor of Caesarea. This concludes chapter 23. Actually, there are many good lessons in this chapter. How St. Paul, when he reviled the chief priest, he focused on Lysias and took responsibility for his error. How he was wise in defending himself by turning or dividing his enemies against each other. How God actually comforted St. Paul by appealing to him in a special vision to comfort him and to give him hope. How God revealed the conspiracy of the Jews to St. Paul's nephew, and how God actually allowed St. Paul's nephew to go to the commander and work it in the commander's heart to trust St. Paul's nephew without further investigation, and how actually God delivered St. Paul from their hand and he went safely to Caesarea. So actually the main message in this chapter, even if people wanted to hurt us or to destroy us, if we trust God, God will never allow anything happen to us without his permission. Glory be to God forever.